Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now, imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
And welcome to the Billboard Chart Beat Podcast. Trevor Anderson here, chart manager at Billboard, joined as always by
Gary Trust, Billboard's senior director of charts.
So, not bringing you the most uplifting story surrounding this week's new number one on the Hot 100. Usually a pretty celebratory occasion around here, but this one obviously going to go down a little bit different in the history books, given that the artist at number one this week, XXXTentacion, hits number one for the first time in his career with the song Sad. Unfortunately, the reason the song gets number one is because of all the attention and tributes surrounding his death. He was shot and killed last Monday, so 8 days ago as of this taping down in Florida. So we'll get into some of the details around the streaming rallying that a lot of his fans did. I don't know. So we'll get into a lot of the streaming numbers that really swelled after his death last week. Also, some of the other posthumous number ones from some artists who hit number one shortly after they died as well.
Yeah, it was really not a whole lot uplifting here. Maybe the only thing you can point to is fans celebrating his music, making his legacy go on.
Yeah, and I think, kind of maybe a little surprising for some people that, for an artist who had been out for only less than 2 years, had this much support, had this much groundswell to get these numbers to get to number one. So we'll dive into that in a little bit. And we'll also talk about Juice WRLD. We've been keeping an eye on him for a while now. The song Lucid Dreams hitting the top five this week. And there's some interesting history behind that, particularly if you're a fan of 80s new wave pop music. There'll be a nice tie-in for you there.
Good thing I'm here.
Great. Yeah, I know Gary's going to be there to guide us through all of that. And of course, we would be remiss if we didn't mention the Carters with that surprise album coming out last Saturday. Hits the Billboard charts this week, so we'll talk about their debut on the Hot 100. So that's all on the way. Plus, we're going to continue with part two of our chat with hit songwriter Justin Tranter. Last week, we mentioned we were going to talk about four recent big hits for him. We got to exactly one of them, so we have three left to go. We're going to talk about that.
Yeah, we wound up talking a lot of political issues, got into really so many things other than songwriting, so great stuff. But yeah, we'll swing it back towards songwriting this week.
And what are we flashing back to this week, Gary?
Does this have something to do with there's a fishbowl sitting on the table here, and I have no idea why.
There is, for the record, for our PETA friends out there, it's an empty fishbowl, no fish, no water. But we are going to flashback all the way through 2018 as we hit the midpoint of the year. Just got a set of questions, some discussion-based topics. We're going to bring in a special guest as well to help us with that. So we're going to relive the first 6 months of 2018.
With a fishbowl.
All right, so that's all on the agenda today. So sit back, strap in. Here we go. It is this week's Billboard Chart Beat Podcast. We're going to begin, as always, with the top 10 on the Billboard Hot 100. Here we go.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Number 10.
Why don't you just meet me in the middle? I'm losing my mind just a little. So why don't you just want you to come with me?
Number 9.
Another nostalgia. And when the tears have to cry, I'm picking it
God's plan. God's plan.
Number 8.
I can't do this on my own. Hey, nope. Someone watching this shit close. Yup, yeah, close. I've been me since Scarlet Road. Hey, bro.
Listen to my heart go
Number 7.
Boot up. And my heart go Boot up.
Psycho, lil' mama bad like Michael.
Number
Can't
six.
Really trust nobody with all this jewelry on you. My roof look like a no-show. Got diamonds by the bolo. Come with the Tony Romo for clowns and all the
like you got to you, me, do what I want. Number 5.
Come through,
I need you like you, yeah. Yeah, 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 yeah. I need
I still see your shadows in my room. Can't take back the love
Number
that
4.
I gave you. It's to the point why I love and I hate you, and I cannot change you, so I must replace you. Oh, easier said than done.
That's a real one in your reflection. Without a follow,
Number 3.
Without a mission, you really piping up on these niggas. You gotta be nice for what to these niggas? I understand.
Did I look it like that? I'm a district in the chain.
Number 2.
Drop the top and blow the brand. Oh, he's so handsome.
Who am I? Someone that's afraid to let go. Get aside.
And number 1.
Yeah, suicide if you ever try to let go. I'm sad, I know, yeah. I'm sad, I know, yeah.
And bringing us out, new number 1, as we mentioned, XXXTentacion, Sad. Hitting number 1 with a huge 52-1 jump. Of course, coming just a few days after his death in Florida when he was shot and killed at just 20 years old. Obviously, a lot of reaction from celebrities and just regular everyday people, some good, some bad, but I think pretty impressive in a real sense that given that he had died on a Monday, that only gave him about half the tracking week to get these streaming numbers that he ended up getting, 48.9 million streams for the week. So that's up 264% from the week before. So a huge amount of support there. People, I guess, either maybe checking out his music for the first time if they had heard those reports. Of course, the fans really going to rally around that. But just with half the tracking week to sort of outdo every other song is something.
Yeah, that's an interesting point about maybe people didn't know who he was. Maybe that actually worked in favor of the song because there's more of a curiosity factor where if it's an artist who's more established, people might think, oh, okay, I know that music. Maybe in a weird way, it kind of helped.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, hard to undo some of the things he did, but...
It's hard to put any kind of a happy spin on this, but kind of reminds me of obviously a different backstory, but when Selena died in 1995, she went to number 1 on the Billboard 200. And I just remember at the time thinking what a sad story that was. And same kind of thing where she was, I think, pretty unknown to mainstream audiences, big Latin star at that point. But pop audiences really didn't get to know Selena's music, sadly, until she was shot and killed.
All right, and with Sad hitting number 1, as some chart watchers and XXX fans have pointed out, the first time in 10 years we've been faced with an artist hitting number 1 on the Hot 100 after passing. The last occurrence of that was back in 2008, just a little over a decade ago, when Static Major was featured on Lil Wayne's Lollipop. That was a 5-week hit back in 2008, but unfortunately Static had passed before the song hit number 1. Before Static Major, this has happened 7 times in Hot 100 history, going all the way back to 1958. The first time was in 1967, Otis Redding, the song Sittin' on the Dock of the Bay. Just a few years later, Janis Joplin as well, with Me and Bobby McGee. Jim Croce, a couple years after that, 1973, with Time in a Bottle. Jump ahead to 1980, John Lennon, with the song Just Like Starting Over. And then 1997, twice actually that year, Notorious B.I.G. on both songs. The first, Hypnotize, his own single from Life After Death. And then a few months later that same year, Mo Money, Mo Problems, which also featured Puff Daddy and Mace. And then Soulja Slim in 2004, as featured on the song Slow Motion by Juvenile. So there are the 8 artists, including XXXTentacion, who have hit number 1 after their passing. And as with XXX, a lot of that really a lot of those artists getting that support and that fan base really rallied. A lot of these acts hitting number one just a few weeks or months after their death, when public support and public emotions were still really raw. And with some of these new projects coming out that people recorded just, you know, days and weeks before their death, fans really rallied around them and sent them straight to the top.
All right, should we move on to something a little, I suppose we really can't get less happy than that. Should we move on to something a little bit happier, Trevor?
Can't get much sadder than that.
All right. Also in the top five for the Hot 100, Juice WRLD rises to the top five, 6-4. So his first top five hit on the Hot 100. Interesting from a writing credit. You mentioned this at the beginning. Trevor has a tie-in to 80s, 90s alternative pop. Sting is a co-writer on the song because the song samples his 1993 song, Shape of My Heart. This is Sting's first top five hit as a writer. It's on his 1993 album, 10 Summoner's Tales. It had some really good singles. If I Ever Lose My Faith in You is the first single. Maybe Fields of Gold, maybe best known.
I know If I Ever Lose My Faith. In particular, I got to give a shout out to Lady Gaga, who I think did a great version of that song a few years ago back at the Kennedy Center Honors when Sting was getting a tribute. Probably maybe about 3 or 4 years ago at this point, but I remember really, you know, just another side of Gaga that showed how versatile an artist she really is.
Nothing About Me was the third single, and then Shape of My Heart was fourth single. Actually never hit a Billboard chart, so kind of weird that now, if you just take even a piece of it, the highest charting hit on the Hot 100 from this album, from Sting in 1993, is the fourth single from the original album that never even charted.
I know that the spades are the swords of a soldier. I know that the clubs are weapons of war. That diamonds mean money for this art, but that's not the shape of my heart.
So, one of those weird things that 25 years later, a song that was a single never did anything on any chart, a piece of it, now the basis of a top five hit.
And what a great, you know, sort of connection that is. You may not necessarily think of, obviously, Sting and Juice WRLD in the same vein, same era, same breath, same genre, anything, but... whether it was is Juice WRLD the guy himself, one of the producers, you know, kind of nice to see that sort of behind the scenes connection that, you know, people are obviously aware of their musical history, have much more interest and don't get enough credit for sort of the wide influences they can bring to a song.
Yeah. And, you know, I'll Be Missing You, we saw Sting work pretty well as a rap song collaboration, and his newest album's with Shaggy. So we've been seeing now decades of Sting just kind of popping up in genres maybe you wouldn't expect.
Moving on to the Carters, who are back in action. Beyonce, Jay-Z, now as one combined family unit, at least for this album, making a splash with their album Everything Is Love, which was surprise released, as I'm sure everybody saw when those tweets and that news notification exploded on the 16th. Album debuts this week at number 2 on the Billboard 200. There's 5 songs that make the Hot 100 from the album this week, the most popular of which is Ape Shit, showing up at number 13 this week, also really driven by the music video if you have not seen it. Really cool, very artistic. Of course, Beyonce just keeps breaking the barrier with a lot of her videos. This time we're setting it in Paris, and mostly in the Louvre. The Mona Lisa makes an appearance and everything. So think of it. I mean, of course, the Carters have clearance to do anything, but to shoot a music video inside the world's most famous art museum, let's go.
All right, let's get back to our guest from last week. Again, started talking to Justin Traynor last week about songwriting and just got into a lot of different topics that were so interesting that this interview just went long enough that we want to split it into two parts and get more of his insights this week on co-writing. So we're going to get to some hits that he wrote recently. Linkin Park's Heavy, he co-wrote. Julia Michaels' Issues. Maroon 5's Cold. So we'll talk about all those. Again, Justin recently won Songwriter of the Year honors at the 2018 BMI Pop Music Awards for the second consecutive year. So really excited to have him back on the podcast. We're just going to pick up where we left off about last week. Here's more from Justin Traynor, our special guest on the Billboard Chartbeat Podcast.
Why is everything so heavy?
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
So much more than I can carry. I keep dragging around what's bringing me down. If I just let go, I'd be set free. Holding on.
Why is everything so heavy? You say that I'm paranoid.
If only because I brought these songs up, I want to make sure we at least get to them, Justin. Linkin Park's Heavy, which now it's obviously takes on a whole different angle. What was it like writing Heavy? It was such a different song for Linkin Park, and for it to become a big pop hit that sounded very 2017. It was such a great story, and then it obviously turned into a really sad final hit. What was the process of writing Heavy?
Just me and Julia going in and working with the guys, and kind of like everything, just talking about what people are feeling and thinking, and let a conversation kind of lead the way. That's kind of the gist of it. I wish there was some big crazy, you know, story about something really specific, but it was just, Julia has a lot of anxiety that she's spoken up publicly, so I'm not like spilling any tea here. So I think that, you know, Julia and Chester were relating in that sense about their heavy minds. And then the song just kind of, came together. It's obviously, it's become something bigger, which, you know, is a thing that, it's hard to talk about because obviously we lost somebody. It's a song I'm very proud of, and I'm honored that I was a part of it, but it's obviously heavy. It's fucking heavy.
In terms of the song's melody, it's really not that surprising that you'd work with Linkin Park. I mean, a song like Breaking the Habit, as heavy as some of those arrangements were, I always felt in some ways Linkin Park kind of was a pop band. In terms of those songs, you could hear them as pop hits. So for you to
they definitely were a pop band, because pop just means popular. And they were one of the biggest bands of all time. So they were pop as fuck.
We're talking about Believer, talking about Heavy, Maroon 5's Cold. Anything stand out about writing that song?
Gary asks, and maybe the answer is like, nah, you know, just another hit for me.
No, that was a great day in the studio with John Ryan and Jay Cash, and, you know, just kind of, I really love, you know, whether, you know, Justin Bieber Sorry or Maroon 5 Cold, I love creating space for, you know, straight men to be vulnerable and to be hurt and to be, emotional. And so that was really my goal with Cold, was to create this world where, he was basically getting, like, slowly but surely heartbroken. And I think we've all been in those relationships where, like, this isn't going good, but we aren't calling it quits. I'm like, what the fuck is happening? And we're just kind of, you know, we're just kind of bringing each other down and kind of creating that world, and just creating space to allow that sort of vulnerability to exist with straight top dude.
I assume that Future wrote his own verse in the song, but did you have any interaction with the verse, or, you know, is it different writing when you know a rap is going to come in the middle or anything like that?
I wasn't a part of that process at all, but I'm a huge Future fan, and I think his melodies are fucking crazy. And obviously his lyrics are crazy. I wasn't really a part of that section of the song, sadly. So I can't really give you any good info.
Now, to that point, that's kind of interesting. Did you Did you know that there was going to be a rap verse in that song at all, or did you write it as a pop song and then maybe later somebody said, you know, maybe we could use a rap verse here?
I think, to be honest, I can't remember exactly, but I think we did. On the demo I have, I don't think there is like there isn't like a 16 bar space for a rap. So I don't know if so I can't really remember, to be honest. I wish I could tell. I write like 10 songs a week, so sometimes it's hard to keep track of this shit.
Understood.
And the other song that you won a BMI Pop Music Award for, I don't know if this one is maybe close to your heart because it was Julia's first hit as an artist, Julia Michaels' Issues. Yeah.
It's crazy. I mean, that's just one of my proudest moments just because, you know, her and I have such a beautiful history together and a beautiful present together and a beautiful future together that to see this song that basically pushed her to do this, you know, this song that came out of her that I was lucky enough to just help elevate and focus and grow, you know, because that's her. This is Issues is 100% Julia's story. You know, that this is her, and so to be a part of that and to help create something that made her go, oh fuck, I have to sing this myself, and then for the song to be so massive, I mean, it's pretty crazy. I mean, it's the biggest song from a debut artist of last year, so that's a pretty magical moment, when especially when I have such history with that person and care so much about her. And you know, always my favorite thing about what Julia does is that she is not afraid to be brutally honest, even when she's, and so it almost appears like she's speaking ill of herself in her lyrics, but actually I think by owning those ideas, by owning the dark thoughts, by owning the issues, pun intended, it becomes very empowering. It becomes very positive. It becomes very hopeful in a sense, because she's so willing to acknowledge fucking everything.
I kind of put it lyrically with another song you co-wrote, Bad at Love, and you kind of look at the lyrics of I've got issues, I'm bad at love. It, kind of picturing myself in that writing room where you're really getting people to open up and be really honest and admit all these things. And that's got to be what connects with people when they hear these lyrics.
Well, thank you very much. Yeah, Bad at Love, I am super, super proud of. Just that was the first day I ever met Halsey. With me, Halsey, and Ricky Reed, the producer, the three of us, just got in, went to his studio. And I'd known Ricky for a minute, but the first day I met Halsey, and I was just so blown away by her writing talent. Like, she's the fucking real deal when it comes to writing. And yeah, I just love to kind of, just to find that urgency and find, I think for me, no one knows what a hit is, right? And you never know what's going to work and what's not going to work. But I just feel like if I can create an inspiring conversation and create a way to make people feel confident to tell those truths, then I think at least, even if the song isn't a hit or even if it isn't one of the best, at least it's honest and at least it's real. So I think it has a better chance of connecting. And Bad at Love makes me so proud because in the first verse she uses male pronouns in a romantic setting, and in the second verse she uses female pronouns in a romantic setting. And you know, I don't know if I can think of a major pop song that is such like a bisexual anthem without it's not even about being bi, it's just about living her life as a bisexual woman. I think that makes me really, really proud, because you know, to have a song on pop radio using male and female pronouns in a romantic setting is not an easy feat, and we fucking did that shit.
I got to ask you real quick about a couple other hits you've co-written, Justin. Good For You, Selena Gomez. That's also kind of like Issues in some ways, that I feel like these songs have a real uniqueness to them, and you know, a lot of pop music can sound like other hits. I feel like a song like Issues, it kind of sounds like its own song. Good For You is just really kind of its own song. You wind up really creating these songs that just kind of have their own lane.
Yeah, I think, you know, both the songs you mentioned, Issues and Good For You, you know, those are both with Julia Michaels. And, you know, we set out, right? It was just like there was no... I think when we both got into writing before we met each other, I was doing like pop writing for maybe like 9 months before I met her. She'd been doing it for, even though she's so young, she was been doing it for a couple years. And I'll speak for myself. I can't speak for her, but you know, the first couple of sessions I was in, it's like, oh, okay, so here's a track from so-and-so DJ that just had a big pop hit. I should just try to make like a normal pop hit to try to make this happen, and realized really quickly that like, that's not what I'm good at. And those types of songs that I was doing weren't getting cut. And there's a lot of writers who are really fucking good at like, when they just, oh, let's be inspired by this and let's try to make this feel like this. They're really fucking good at that, and it feels great. But for me, it just, I realized I was best when I was just doing what I thought was cool and what was awesome. And Julia is very much the same way. You know, Good For You started with Julia just on the mic freestyling shit. So for her, you know, that was just what came out, and that's what she thought was cool. So it's like, it's not like a super conscious effort to do that, but it's definitely something that we did. 'Cause I just wanna look good for you, I just wanna look good for you, Let me show you how proud I am to be yours. Leave this dress a mess on the floor. Still look
So my other question, a lot of times when I hear Good For You, I always wonder, since we're asking the songwriter, was there ever any thought to call the song Good For Ya instead of Good For You? Because Selena never says you. It's always ya.
I love that. Is maybe, and this is a compliment. Please take this as a compliment. That is maybe like the most like music geek question I have ever gotten, and I love it. No, there was no thought to ever call it yeah. I don't know, don't quote me on this because I'm sure someone's done it. I for the most part don't put like phonetic spelling in any of my titles, but I think Cardi B through your phone, I think she spells through THRU, so I think that there is, that did happen to me at one point, so I can no longer claim that, but for the most part I just, you know, spelled it word. And also so many of my fucking titles are just like one word, so boring. But yeah, no, we never thought to make it Good For Ya, but I apologize. I'm sorry if that caused you any stress through your life.
I'm just gonna call it Good For You for now. I feel like I have your blessing to call it.
Yes, you 100% have my blessing.
And other song, just I'm a big Mariah fan. The song Like Mariah, Fifth Harmony. How did that come about? You read a lot of original stuff. How did all of a sudden you wind up basically reworking Always Be My Baby?
I'm just so glad you asked that question about that, just about that song in general, because I fucking love that song so much. So I was working with J.R. Rhodum a lot, and I still work with him now, but in the early days of my pop writing, he was one of my like main go-to collaborators, and we did Centuries together, which has the Suzanne Vega sample. When I was in the studio with him, you know, he played a bunch of tracks for me and Raja Kumari to write to. I heard the Suzanne Vega sample, and, you know, in my heart, I'm a lesbian from the 90s, and even though Suzanne's not a lesbian, I don't think she identifies as a lesbian, but, you know, musically, it was like a very big, like, lesbian folk era in the 90s, and that's where my heart lies. And so I was like, oh my God, I have to write to that track. No one else can write to that track. That's mine.
Yeah.
And then the only other time I've used a blatant vocal sample, because you know, Bad Liar Selena Gomez, we use the bass line from Psycho Killer Talking Heads. So I've done it, but Like Mariah, just the A&R had asked JR to flip that sample. They'd asked JR to use that sample, and I was like, well, that sample's so iconic and so obvious that, like, there's no way that we can do anything. We have to acknowledge Mariah in the song. You can't have that sample in here and not acknowledge the queen. So then this idea came of just, oh, you got me singing like Mariah. Like, I'm so in love with you, and you love me so good that I'm singing like Mariah. And I just love that song. I think it's so fun and goofy, and a lot of what I do now is pretty emotional as a pop writer, so I love looking back through my catalog and seeing like the really, really campy ones. And I, you know, as a queer person, camp is in my DNA, so I live for that song.
Any feedback from Mariah herself? You ever heard from her team?
She tweeted about it. Mariah Carey tweeted about it, and she approved of it, and my heart stopped. I couldn't believe it. I probably should get that tweet framed, actually. I think that you just reminded me I'm going to get that shit framed.
That's it.
Well, this is all great, Jess. The thing I'm just really left with, we've been talking, you're talking about how, you know, whether it's your speech at the awards or saying how you really at this point want to be the person who's helping other artists get their message out there and help them express what they're saying. It just feels like empathy is a big part of not just your writing, but just who you are. And whether it's coming from a sort of an underdog angle, you're just you just kind of want everybody to find their happiness.
I feel like people have a right to tell their own stories, especially marginalized people. And so if I can be, if I can open doors, whether that's creatively as a co-writer or whether that's, you know, business-wise of signing people or whether that's, you know, shouting people out or whether that's speaking on issues, if I can help any marginalized people, you know, have their voices be heard and have their stories be told, then, you know, I want to do that.
And speaking of shouting out, I do want to go back because you said in particular you thought that there should be more voices from those marginalized communities, women of color in particular, you highlighted. And songwriters, you know, don't nearly get as much shine as singers and performers. Are there any songwriters that you want to shout out that people should pay attention to, look at, check out their work?
Of course. I mean, Sarah Ahrens is an amazing queer woman from Australia who is slaying the planet right now. She did Zed Stay and she did Zed the Middle. Stara, which she's really well known, pop writer, if you pay attention, and she also writes hip hop and everything. If you're paying attention to songwriters, Stara is obviously one of the superstars right now in our community, and she's a queer woman of color. So that's really, really exciting. Priscilla Renee is a straight woman of color who's been slaying the game forever. Tekashi's Timber, Selena Gomez Perfect, a lot of amazing, amazing songs. Who else is great? Oh, Kennedy. She just goes by Kennedy. She's a new, amazing, amazing young female writer. She's also queer, and she is unbelievable. And luckily, she's signed to me. I get to reap the benefits of her brilliance all day, every day. There's a lot of really, really exciting writers, and I think that, you know, the shift is coming. But if you look at this, if you look at the statistics, it's still only 9% of people involved in music are women. So it's still really, really bad, even though we have these amazing, you know, writers, you know, slaying right now. There's still a lot of work to do.
All right, Justin, you'll keep winning awards, and we'd love to have you back and keep talking more about music, societal issues, bigger stuff, whatever. This has been great. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, take care, Justin.
Awesome. Bye. Thank you.
All right, and to wrap things up, we are going to flashback through 2018. So we're going pretty recent. We're going to talk about some big things that happened this year, some of our little favorite picks, some things on the charts that surprised us this year, things we may not have expected. To do that, we're going to also bring in a special guest here. You may remember him from a few episodes we've had previously, Andrew Untenberger, senior editor.
You're one of two guests, Andrew, you and a fishbowl.
Oh yeah, well, I'm just happy to be able to share the building with the fishbowl. You know, I'm not you know, 1A and 1B really on this podcast.
All right, so the way this is gonna work, we just have a couple little discussion starters in the fishbowl. We're gonna keep the answers hopefully as in 2018 as we can. Gary has a look. I don't know if Gary's gonna like where this is going.
No, I'm getting scared. Is this a quiz?
I made sure there's no right or wrong. All right, so Gary's going to get us started. Gary's going to dive into the fishbowl. We'll go around the table, and we'll see how many we get through before we call it quits.
The most under-the-radar chart story of 2018 is?
One that I've been thinking about recently and is of interest to me from kind of a, I don't know, I guess like a chart nerd perspective is the unusual number of collaborative acts that have been getting that I'm charting on Billboard under newly assumed duo names rather than like Hunter Jack instead of Quavo and Travis Scott, or the Carters instead of Jay-Z and Beyonce, which is obviously getting a lot of attention recently, and also Kitsy Ghost for Kanye and Kid Cudi. And it's going to have sort of interesting implications long term of, you know, kind of, you know, as some of these artists, especially Beyonce and Jay-Z, reach, you know, all time records of Hot 100 hits and top 40 hits and things like that. So that's an interesting thing to me. And it's funny to me that we've had three of them in 1 year. And I can't remember another one like it in this decade where we've had the super duo getting their own name for the one off project. It's very interesting to me. Should I pick the next one?
Yeah. Okay. Andrew's going to go next.
All right. We have here the biggest music shocker of the year is ...
To me, okay, the biggest shocker of the year, I think still, it's probably a pretty top level choice, but I think the Bruno Mars triple sweep at the Grammy Awards is still very surprising to me, only because, I mean, obviously people thought that it was going to be Kendrick's year. Maybe Jay-Z's year, you know, for a legacy artist. I guess nobody except Paul Grine, who was on the podcast,
it was such a safe pick.
Yeah, that Bruno had enough. I mean, it was interesting because it was the most innovative album that Bruno had done. So when his middle of the road sort of tunes didn't get the attention, it was a little weird to think that this album would. But for me, it's not even just that he got one of those awards. It's to get all three, I thought, was a very like, I mean, it's becoming more common. I mean, Adele obviously did it last year.
He did an album that fit a lot of different genres, made it really safe for voters, and it mixed pop, it mixed R&B. The Grammys love when people go retro like that, so I think that all played into it.
Okay, I'm going in. All right, we are going to talk right now about... okay. In front of us, we've got a list of the top 10 hits of 2018 so far on the Hot 100. So the most surprising top 10 Hot 100 hit this year is what song?
I would say it's Boot Up by LMA.
I was going to say that too.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really was.
I remember, you know, Trevor was a longstanding supporter of this song, or at least someone who kept pointing out that it was gaining in metrics unusually quickly on the Hot 100 and the R&B charts. It's a song that I don't think really fits what most people consider to be a radio song in 2018. It's very old school in its production. It's sort of a simple kind of, you know, they don't make them like that anymore, R&B song. It almost sounds like something that, you know, like a Jammin' Lewis song from the late 80s could have been on the side two of Janet Jackson's Control album. And it just kind of took off. And I think the Hot 100 hits that I'm always the most interested in are the ones that there's no necessarily good cultural reason for why it should be a hit. You know, it's not a part of a major trend. It doesn't come from an artist who has a long success, you know, long track record of chart success. And LMA just kind of came out of nowhere with this very sort of sweet, intimate song and a nice music video to go with it. And she kind of went viral with it in a way that songs like that don't normally go viral, especially not in 2018. And so that was one that I still find surprising, but a very pleasant surprise because I think it's one of the best songs of the year.
I'll pick a couple that now really don't seem surprising at all, but I think at the time they probably did. Meant to Be, not at all a guarantee sure. that was going to be a hit. It started as a country and pop hit, but Florida Georgia Line hitting number two on the Hot 100, biggest hit they'd ever had. So I think that was a little bit of a breakthrough. Also, again, sounds really weird to say now, but Havana going to number one when that first came out. Even with Despacito helping that sound become more popular, not a guarantee at all that Havana was going to become any kind of hit, never mind just a huge number one hit. Trevor, any picks?
I do agree with Boot Up for a lot of the reasons you guys named. I'm going to go a little bit, maybe on its face, it kind of is an obvious pick. I'm still going to go with Freaky Friday. And I'm not surprised that it was in the top 10, like necessarily, but I am surprised at how long it stayed in the top 10, because for a song that is so married to the idea of what its video is, if you have not seen Freaky Friday and you just hear it, it makes no sense. How is this song, you know, it's goofy, it's weird. Obviously it has Chris Brown on it, so that gives it some sort of commercial hook. But even Chris Brown, you know, is not a guaranteed hit maker like he was a decade ago. Certainly, you know, he has the question marks of allegations and there's a big contingent against him. And I think one thing that really made this song last for the multiple weeks it was in the top 10 was radio. And I mean, obviously streaming was the big factor for it, but there was continued radio support for the song, which I thought was so interesting because in an age where we talk about radio being so behind, so conservative, so safe, to play a song that is so married to a video that none of your listeners are going to have access to this video when they hear this song, to play by an artist, even though Chris Brown is still very much beloved in the urban community, who isn't necessarily on the best footing with a lot of your listeners, to go out there and put that up as well. That to me was you know, a pretty bold choice, and maybe something radio needs to go more towards in the next coming years to keep it afloat. But I think overall, when you package that up, Freaky Friday being a multiple week top 10, at least a month in the top 10, is something that you would not have seen coming.
All right, back to the fishbowl. Ooh, 2018 MVP behind the scenes.
So this is somebody who's not an artist, songwriter, producer, label executive, industry person, whoever.
I'll go with my guy Pharrell, having himself a moment again.
Another Pharrenaissance?
Another Pharrenaissance, at least the third one, possibly the fourth, depending on how you break up the first two. Yeah, sort of a behind-the-scenes figure on Havana. I think not a lot of people knew that he was associated with that song. I believe as both a writer and a producer, definitely as a producer. You can actually hear him kind of chirping on the song, too. And involved with new Ariana Grande project, The Light Is Coming. We'll see what kind of chart success that has. But, also involved with other Camila songs. He was on the Lil Uzi Vert album at the end of last year. And he's just kind of in the mix again. I know he's involved with some other stuff that I'm not thinking about off the top of my head, but it's always good for me to see Pharrell, back where he belongs at the top of the charts. So that's an exciting thing for me about 2018.
I'm going to go with somebody way left center. I don't think a lot of people outside of sort of the music sphere will know who Cole Bennett is, but I think that guy definitely deserves an MVP award. If you don't know who he is, he's a music video director, young kid, really involved with a lot of these SoundCloud rappers, makes a lot of their music videos. The songs obviously take off well on SoundCloud on their own, but when they hit YouTube and they need to get these big numbers, especially to push them up the charts, his videos, his visuals, the whole aesthetic he brings is obviously very patented, unique. I feel like once you watch a good number of them, you get a good sense of it. But I think in general, just what he's been able to do for so many different people in such a quick amount of time has really helped himself out. And I think it's important too, interesting from a branding perspective, that all his videos like have the directed by Cole Bennett tag in the title. So, one thing I think that's kind of maybe lost is you don't really know a lot of music video directors from past eras, because it was always about the artist. It's a Michael Jackson video, it's Beyonce's video, it's whoever's video. Now he's trying to like make this sort of his own brand, his own statement, that you'll know who Cole Bennett is. And you may not know who this rapper is or this song, but it's a Cole Bennett video, so that's why I'm gonna check it out. I think it's a smart play.
I hate to call this MVP because valuable probably isn't the word, but I feel like one of the biggest drivers of hits has been just everything that's been going on in the world. So when you have a hit like This Is America.
All right, Donald Trump. Yeah. Let's go.
MVP. Society.
I hate to give any kind of award, but most people are good. Luke Bryan, just with just so much bad news that's been in the cycle for so long. We're starting to see music reflect that. And in some ways where it's just straight out addressing it in a song like This Is America, or Luke Bryan taking a very positive angle that there's still good, even though so many things in the news cycle.
And Tears Left to Cry, you can probably throw that in there.
Yeah, probably could. So, pop music, part of its job, reflecting what's going on in the world. So it's happening maybe more than it has in a long time this year.
All right, Andrew's up.
All right, back to the fishbowl. Let's see what we have here. I got a twofer. What do you think, left hand or right hand?
Let's go left hand.
All right. And we have here the 2018 MVP artist is.
Oh, see, that's a perfect. Yeah. That's perfect.
Well, aren't we kind of just fighting for second place here? Isn't number one pretty far and away number one at this point? All right, well, I'm sorry. Maybe I'm jumping the gun here. Trevor, who do you think the 2018 MVP is?
I'm going to say, okay, look. I know what you're going to say, and I know everyone's going to say it, and I know that the answer should be Drake. But I'm not going to say Drake, because I'm going to say Cardi B. And I'm going to say Cardi B because I know obviously she's not been in the top spot nearly as much as Drake. Nobody has. But I think it's something when you have to look back at what we expected You knew Drake was going to be big if Drake put out anything this year. You were that's not a surprise. Maybe to the degree that he still kind of surprises himself, sure. But I think the gap is much narrower than Cardi B, what Cardi B has done in the past 6 months. I mean, for her to go from Bodak Yellow, which I think a lot of people, they won't say it now, it was going to be a one-hit wonder. She was going to get that number one.
Yeah.
She's not going to have the same attitude. The album's going to flop. It's not going to be nearly as good. And she'll kind of, you know, struggle for 12 months. But she's powered through. She's been on tracks with the Nicki and Migos, still gotten great verses out of them, the most memorable lines. She's the Trap Selena. She gets on Bruno Mars's Finesse, updates that, gives him a nice hit there, which, I mean, the song would not have been the same hit, I think, without Cardi sort of giving it new life. I like it. I mean, this is obviously a tribute to more of her Dominican roots, but to get Bad Bunny, J Balvin, to do it in Spanish.
Yeah, she's probably hitting more angles, more genres than Drake is.
Yeah, 100%.
Maroon 5 as well.
Maroon 5, of course, like you just said, yeah, hopping on a track with, you know, a 10, 12-plus-year-old pop rock band. I mean, that's, you think about those two things 6, 7 months ago, no, wouldn't have worked. Even working with Ozuna, I mean, I just think you put all that together, what Cardi B's been able to do, based on what I think a lot of people thought that she would be able to bring to the table. I mean, that to me is legit.
You do make a good case for Cardi. She certainly, she has the breadth of hits. And I also probably should give a shout out here to Post Malone, who charted all 18 songs off of Beer Bongs and Bentley, set some Spotify records, I think has the best first week sales of the year. So I think if you're filling out a ballot, those are your 1, 2, 3 in some order. But still, you debut 2 consecutive songs at number one. You pass Michael Jackson on the all-time weeks at number one rankings. And you have 2 of the biggest and best songs of the year. I think the award's got to go to Drake. Give him the trophy.
And I'll give you the point. And on top of that, you still don't even have an album out.
And
Heavyweight isn't even there.
Watch the chart records just start tumbling as after June 29th. It's going to be... It's going to be a reckoning.
All right, I'm going to score some points with the Army. I'm going to say I do think Drake is clearly, in terms of the Hot 100, the biggest performance that we've seen this year. But BTS getting their first top 10 on the Hot 100 with Fake Love, first number one on the Billboard 200, the applause at the Billboard Music Awards when they performed. But even beyond that, it seems like they're helping, obviously, spark a K-pop trend. Blackpink this week debuts number 55 on the Hot 100. So it's obviously BTS, but a little bit more than that as well. So I'll go K-pop, but I think Drake. Hot 100.
I'll go K-pop, but I think Drake. Okay. So we talked a lot about hits. That's what we do here. We talk about the hits. But I do want to give a shout out to maybe some that haven't quite hit the highs that people expected them to. So what is a song that you thought was going to be a bigger hit than it turned out to be? And bigger hit, it can be a number 2 hit that you thought would be number 1. It could be a number 100 hit that you thought should be number 65.
All right, yeah, I'll take first on that one. I'll rep for our recent cover star, Troye Sivan, who... I think, you know, he had some chart success in his last album. I think Youth was a top 40 hit, I think, and certainly a favorite among the Billboard staff in 2016. And this year he comes out with My, 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 which, you know, the first single off his next album, which still isn't coming out for another 2.5 months somehow. I'm not sure how that happened. But, you know, I think I remember in the office the next day, like everyone was buzzing about that Troye Sivan song. And you know, it sounded massive. It had like a really, really cathartic chorus. It had a really striking visual. And I think a lot of people thought this was going to be all right. This was him leveling up from from breakout artist to superstar, basically. And this was going to kind of put him on the level of the heavy hitters in pop. And you know, though he got nice critical acclaim, I think everyone on the internet's really into the song, and it maybe made a little headway at radio, but did not really make it very far off the Hot 100. I want to say it stalled number 80, maybe. And you know, it kind of hung around for a little while, you know, on radio. I think it did better on the pop songs chart and a couple other things, but definitely not that kind of massive crossover hit that a lot of us were hoping for personally. Even the one after that, you know, Dance to This, which is the second, I think, or maybe the third or actually fourth song off the album. But it's the one that had Ariana Grande as a featured appearance. And I think a lot of us thought, oh, all right, well, you know, that's a bankable star. you know, maybe Troy doesn't quite have the star power of his own yet to put a song like that over, but you get her on the song, get them together, it's a good song, then maybe that'll be the one that kind of puts him over the top. And I don't even think that made the Hot 100 this week. I don't know if we're still incomplete. I think maybe the first week was broken up in terms of chart points, but to not even hit the Hot 100, and then for My to peak at number 80, and then for the album to still be months away, I think it's not the trajectory we were hoping for Troye Sivan on this album. But you know, he's got a huge fan base. We're all very supportive of him at Billboard. He is the cover star, and I think he's going to be around for a very long time. But him as like a top 40 conquering like Taylor Swift type figure maybe isn't in the cards, at least not immediately.
I'm thinking Cardi B, a song that I understand why it wasn't maybe the biggest pop hit because foreign language, but La Modelo, song she had out, big Latin hit. I really thought that could cross over to pop just because the hook was so good.
And Cardi singing?
Yeah, she sounds really good on it. I would love to hear. I think that totally would have worked on Top 40 radio. If Despacito can work, I feel like that would have. I
mean, she might have been her own worst enemy on that one. I mean, it's possible that, you know, Top 40 was already just Cardi saturated,
right?
You know, between Finesse, which was obviously a huge song at the beginning of the year, and Bodak Yellow, I think, was still hanging around at the end of 2017, early 2018. Some people were probably playing Be Careful. Only so much Cardi to go around, you know? Yeah. You gotta make some room for the others.
That's a good sign when you have too many hits. That maybe you're hurting your own potential other hits.
Certainly.
Yeah. Trevor?
Okay, I want to start with Cardi, because I am going to say, as I kind of teased in my
By the way, I like how she's both MVP and has two of the most underrated hits of the year. That's just tremendous.
That's you know, you can conquer all the bases. Check it out. Yeah. I'm going to say Finesse, I think. So many people, and I think they correctly pegged this as a number one hit. It was a number three hit. So obviously, like, it did monster damage on the chart. But just, I remember, like, the night that remix dropped, everyone was so excited to see Cardi on it. She was still, you know, relatively new. She had No Limit had been out, Motorsport had been out, but it was the first sort of different collaboration for Cardi. The video, people were so hype about the video. And then, of course, with Bruno sweeping the Grammys a few weeks later, it felt like, okay, there's like a swelling for this song to get to number one. And, you know, between Ed Sheeran, Havana, it didn't make it. I still feel like that just felt like it was the biggest song for a couple weeks there, where people, I mean, just excited to hear it, danceable, fun to sing along to. Cardi's verse is so fun to rap with that throwback and that 90s sort of style with Salt and Pepper in them. Just, I mean, I know obviously number three is nothing to cry about, but I just wanted it to go too higher.
Aren't you making a case that Drake really is the MVP? Because didn't God's Plan come along after that?
It may have. I don't know.
No, who remembers that long ago?
Forget
that
God's
was
Plan.
Months ago.
Yeah. Another song a little lower that I'm a little surprised that's not taken off a little better. I like the song Guatemala a lot by Swae Lee. I think I'm surprised because it's really in the Unforgettable vein, which obviously was a massive hit with French Montana last year. He was on the hook on that. I know the Ray Sherman album kind of, it was a little overwhelming for a lot of people to be a triple album. So maybe people thought it lost some focus, lost a little bit of sharpness. But for Swae Lee's middle section, which is really an R&B album, I think that's particularly a great standout track. I think it was, particularly in the summertime, I thought it was going to get a little more heat. It's starting to come back around at radio a little bit, so maybe there's some hope. But I just thought that when I heard it, it had just the right kind of quasi-Caribbean vibe that Drake has pulled off a lot, that seems like it would really be a summertime smash. Still pulling for it. Obviously, the returns aren't great out of the gate, but that's one for me.
Yeah, and like you said, that entire Ray Sherman album, I think, is really underrated. Maybe not even critically, but the fact that thing had 24 tracks and still couldn't make the top five of the Billboard 200, that's pretty surprising to me. I mean, considering the way we've seen these overstuffed albums, that it just kind of ends up goosing the track numbers and the streams go through the roof, and you end up doing hundreds of thousands of units in the first week, but it worked for a lot of other artists, including the Migos this year, but who also had like a 24 track album. But Ray Sherman couldn't seem to catch the wave off that one, and despite the fact that, as you say, there's a number of really, really catchy kind of pop songs on that album. And I'll also say that the first time I heard Spoil My Night, which is the song on Post Malone's album where Swae Lee does some of the hook and part of the verses, I thought that was gonna be the biggest song of the year. I like that. That was the song that really grabbed me off that album. I was like, this is gonna be the next single, and it is gonna be massive. And so far, seems like the people prefer Better Now, maybe, as the next Post Malone song of choice. You know, Spoil My Night, it's faring pretty well in the you know, Spotify, iTunes charts, but not as well as three or four of the other songs of that album. So we'll see. Maybe I might have been off on that one. My question is, where did you guys get the fishbowl from? Are there just fishbowls hanging around the office?
No, I took it from video.
No fish were harmed in the making of this podcast.
All right, cool.
All right, well, thank you, Andrew, for coming by.
Always a pleasure.
Always fun to discuss chart topics with you. We'll, of course, be back next week to discuss even more chart topics. Speaking of Cardi B, several times on this podcast, let's talk about her one more time. A lot of people, of course, having I Like It with Bad Bunny and J Balvin pegged, perhaps, for that number one spot next week, on sale for 69 cents at iTunes. And let's not lose this fact. Cardi B, if she goes to number one next week, that'll give her two number ones from her debut album. That'll be the first time we've seen that from a female artist since almost 10 years ago when Lady Gaga pulled off the Just Dance Poker Face duo.
First female rapper with two number ones?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, yeah. I guess she would be the first female rapper with two number ones.
Lots of chart history. Could be next week.
Yeah. All right. So tune in next week. We'll have that race and we'll see if Cardi can make some more chart history. Until then, what are we going to close with?
All right. Let's do a guy that hasn't really impacted the top of the charts yet this year, and not the same way he did last year, but released my favorite album of the year so far. Let's hear a little Charlie Puth. We'll do Dumb For Me. That one's still kind of lingering around the midsection of the charts. Hopefully we're talking about it on the second half of the year podcast.
Tell me what you've done for my life.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.